All right, welcome back. Here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We've gone in more or less chronological order for some of these daily editorials. We're finishing off with Chad's conversation with Mark Chandler. This was from Friday.
Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Chad Markwitz, and I'm speaking today with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. And Mark, it's always great getting you on the show at the end of the week just to wrap things up in the crazy markets that we live in and get your macro thoughts on what's actually moving the needle in a lot of these markets. This week, the clear headline story was the CPI number, the inflation reading, coming in a little bit hotter than people expected when almost everybody was leaning towards it coming in lower because we've seen energy prices pull back, we've seen commodity prices pull back, but people were not expecting services and other components within it to have gone higher. So a little bit of a market turbulence after the fact because, Mark, everybody started looking forward to the Fed and how this affects Fed policy, and everybody's expecting them to not only hike next week, but keep hiking higher than most expected through the end of the year. What do you make of the market reaction to the inflation data this week?
Yeah, wow, huh? Not only did they take interest rates higher, it also hit the stock market pretty hard, where the S&P 500, lowest level since, you know, biggest drop in a couple of months as we retraced that summer rally. So I think that here we are a few days ahead of the FOMC meeting. The market flirted once again with the possibility of a 100 basis point hike, but now feels, I think, much more comfortable with 75 basis points. But the trick is that in the November meeting, that's the next meeting after the following weeks, is the November 2nd meeting, and the market's got 75 basis points priced in for a hike there too. So the market, I think, takes away from the not only the high inflation numbers, but also we had, I think, the fifth week in a row that weekly jobless claims fell. And so we've got, from the Fed's point of view, a tight labor market, high prices, pressure still. And so the market is giving them 75 basis points at the next two meetings, at 150 basis points. And then when you look at the December meeting, the market's leaning towards 50. So between now, as we speak here today, and the end of the year, the market's looking at possibly 200 basis point increase in the Fed funds target as the Federal Reserve doubles the pace of its quantitative tightening. The takeaway, though, is that the market feels the more aggressive the Fed is now, the more likely it's going to break something. And by breaking something, I mean that the market thinks the Fed's going to be raising interest rates. It's going to hurt the economy in such a way that the Federal Reserve will have to cut interest rates by the end of next year. What I'm looking at, I think we talked about this last week, too. I'm looking at the difference between the March 2023 Fed funds contract and the yield of the December 2023 Fed funds contract. That December contract implies a 30 basis point lower yield, which is consistent with that rate cut before then the next year.
Well, Mark, it's interesting because you noted the stronger labor market metrics and that also the Fed is pretty convinced that the market and the economy is stronger than many were talking about a month or two ago, where only headlines we saw were about recession. But eventually, if they keep hiking, the odds are something could break and we could be hiking into a recession. So how do you balance out the narrative between the folks that believe we're already in a recession and that they already are going too far and the other folks that feel they need to keep the pedal to the metal to keep fighting inflation while they can because there is that eventual breaking point coming? And as you mentioned, the expectation that they'll probably have to shift back to cuts next year.
I don't know. I think that what's driving the Federal Reserve right now is not the economy itself. That means that we get weak economic data, like the retail sales number, industrial output figures in the U.S. are disappointing. Many economists cut GDP, Q3 GDP forecast. That alone won't stop the Fed from tightening. The key now is the price pressures. And the Federal Reserve, I think, will say something to this effect. That yes, we recognize that there's a risk that we over-tighten, but the greater risk is that inflation expectations get entrenched into businesses and worker behavior. And so, like on a risk-reward basis, I think is how the Fed's thinking about it, how the Fed presents the case. And so that's why I think that we're headed for a rougher economic time. And, you know, there's an old story about a recession is when your neighbor is out of work and a depression is when you are. And I think that those people who thought that we were in a recession in the first half of the year, even though the broader measures of the economy really weren't contracting, and by that I'm looking at like gross domestic income, which should equal the gross domestic product, but sometimes it doesn't. And frequently really does it really match up. And so what economists really do is take an average of the two. And so I think that what I'm really getting at is that if you thought we were in a recession in the first half this year, just wait to see what's going to happen in the next couple of quarters.
Well, that's definitely something to think about, Mark, because the reality is if we're not in a recession yet and things get even worse, then that could be big trouble and that could adjust the Fed's game plan. But there's also that other camp that believes we could have a soft landing. What do you think the odds of that are? Can the Fed thread the needle here and create a soft landing?
Well, I suppose it could. I mean, there's a lot of variables. I mean, I could see a situation where you tell me that the war with Russia and Ukraine ends. Ukraine defeats the Russians. And that China offers a lot more monetary and fiscal stimulus, get their property market back as that engine of growth. I can see how the U.S. could have a soft landing. If, of course, the Europeans, Canada, some large emerging markets can also have a soft landing. Hard to do it on our own. But I think the odds are pretty slim. So I think that as investors, as business people, we should be preparing for this. I think this is what FedEx said last night as they withdrew their earning forecast because of business conditions. General Electric, McDonald's. We've seen a couple of steel companies, Alcoa. Before that, we saw the large retailers like Walmart and Target. So I think that we're best, you know, of course, we want to hope for the best, but we should prepare for more difficult economic times. And that means capital preservation.
Well, Mark, one way people are trying to preserve their capital is by rushing into the U.S. dollar. We saw the U.S. dollar pull back a week or two ago to the 107 mid-levels, and now it's bounced all the way back up to the 109.50 area. So it's retraced that move all the way back up to close to that 110 area that was starting to break out from a couple weeks ago. So with so many people piling into the dollar, it also can give that impression, but really it's also counterbalanced against the other currencies. So it's counterbalanced against the euro and the yen. We did see the ECB come out and hike 75 basis points. And there are a couple other banks that maybe you could review that are going to be doing some hikes soon. Do you think that's enough to start moving the needle in these other currencies and take a little of the steam off of the U.S. dollar?
Yeah, no, I don't think we've reached that point yet. I think that the ECB hiked but a week earlier. The euro and the dollar index reacted as you would expect with a 75 basis point hike from the ECB. Dollar index weakened, the euro rally. But this week's story was really that CPI that you mentioned. And that lifted the dollar index to this 110 area, more or less. I'm looking for some consolidation, a little bit of a pullback in the dollar index ahead of the FOMC meeting, partly because I think it's all priced in now. So I want to say, like, work sort of like this. The big wagers are already in place. And so this is going to frustrate the short-term momentum traders and the short-term trend followers, and they're going to have to cut their positions. And so I think this takes us down into the FOMC meeting, and then it's a different story. In the bigger picture, I think the dollar index is going to go to maybe, I'm looking at 117.50 to 120. And like you say, we're just hovering around 110 right now. So I just think that with the aggressiveness of Fed policy and the momentum behind this, I think that's going to be hard to stop this quickly, especially thinking about how bad of a winter this could be in Europe.
That's a fair point. There is a lot of concern about the euro land, but there are some continued moves in other central banks to at least start tightening, maybe not at the pace that the Fed has, and that's probably a big reason why the dollar and the U.S. interest rates have overshadowed a lot of other markets, but there are some other central banks that are going to be hiking soon. What are the key ones that we should have our eyes on, Mark?
For sure, yeah. Next week, we've got, besides the Fed meeting, we've got the Bank of England and the Bank of Japan. Bank of England meeting's a difficult one, I think, because they've got a new government and they haven't really given formal announcement of their fiscal intentions. We have some reports about it. We know the direction it's going, but we're not sure the amount, how it's going to be funded, those sort of things. And so this probably pushes the Bank of England to hiking rates 50 basis points. The market here, too, is toying with the idea of a larger move, 75 basis points, with some dreadful retail sales data. And this uncertainty about fiscal policy, I think, keeps the Bank of England at that 50 basis point move. You know, today is the 30th anniversary of when the UK left the ERM, a sterling crisis in the early 90s. And sort of to commemorate that in some kind of like morbid kind of way, sterling fell to its lowest level since 1985. there today on the 16th of September. And there's probably more room for it to fall. But I'm looking for generally for it and the euro to recover a little bit, stabilize, maybe back and fill some of this big move that they've had this week ahead of the FOMC meeting. The other bank that meets is the Bank of Japan. And this is the ironic story is their jawboning has succeeded in stabilizing dollar yen below 145. However, as they complain about the market's volatility, the Bank of Japan announced that they were stepping up their purchases of government bonds. That is at the QE operation. They increase it by about 10% on the 5 to 10 year bond segment that they buy. And this, I think, underscores why intervention, material intervention, is highly unlikely. There are three conditions that make it to increase the probability of success. One, catch the market by surprise. Since they've talked about it for so long, it's not going to catch many people by surprise. Secondly, it helps if it's not unilateral. But with sterling at its lowest level since 1985, the euro near 20-year lows, it's hard to get much sympathy for Japan, who has low inflation in addition to these other factors. And the third thing is that it helps if it is if intervention signals a policy change. And the BOJ is not going to change its policy this week, while the Fed is moving in the opposite direction, raise rates again by 75 basis points.
Well, Mark, you mentioned the word intervention there. And as we talk about the central banks, do you ever remember a time in history where there was so much backstopping of the bond markets by the central banks? Because, you know, in theory, these markets are supposed to trade more freely just based on supply and demand and interest and whether that wanes or waxes. But ever since the great financial crisis in the United States getting more aggressive with quantitative easing, we've seen quantitative easing in almost every country step up. I mean, you name it. Is there ever a time period where we actually go back to pre-2008 great financial crisis where there's just the rate cutting and the rate hiking, but not so much of the backstopping of the bond markets by these central banks?
No, I think that I put it more like this, that during the Great Depression for World War II, governments, they became Keynesian, right? They began using fiscal policy to help support aggregate demand. So in some ways, the central government discovered their balance sheets. In the great financial crisis, the central banks discovered theirs. And the U.S. was not the first to do QE. We just did it on a bigger scale than other countries. And of course, being the largest economy, you sort of have to, I suppose. But I think what happens is that once the government gets the power, it's hard to get it back from them. And partly it's shown to be, I think, from a policymaker's point of view, the reason it was brought out again during the pandemic was that from a policymaker's point of view, it worked during the great financial crisis. So if that's the case, it's like, why get rid of a tool? Why unilateral disarm yourself from a tool that you think has been effective?
I think that's a fair point. And you're right. They're probably not going to give up the power once they've already realized its full potential. It's just looking for any kind of area of the market, and maybe we can wrap up with this thought, outside of central banks, outside of the rate hikes and the quantitative tightening or the quantitative easing, depending on the country, are there any other key data points that you think can move the needle, be it jobs or retail or consumer confidence? Is there anything else you're looking forward to in the next few weeks that you think could move the dial?
The only thing I think right now, the only thing that really matters is inflation. In fact, you know, I say that when I began my career, the monthly trade number in the U.S. was the big number. Reagan was the president. We had Democrat senators and Democrat congressmen taking hammers to Asian imported vehicles. Trade number was what it was all about. And in recent years, it's been the jobs report. And I want to say it now, the key report, CPI, inflation, the only thing that really matters for officials.
Okay, well, we'll wrap it up with that. I guess all eyes are still on, can these central bank tightening policies hurt enough of the demand side of the equation to bring inflation numbers down? And we'll be watching for how things look in October. Until then, Mark, we'll catch you in a couple weeks, and always appreciate getting your thoughts here on the KE Report.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.